would respect people's civil liberties or civil rights. And for her to be in this position of power, with her military background, with her stated kind of allegiance to this extremist far-right agenda, is something that should be concerning to everybody.
That was tech reporter Owen Higgins speaking with KBOO contributor David Rosenberg about his new book called Owned: How Tech Billionaires on the Right Bought the Loudest Voices on the Left. You've been listening to KBOO News in Depth. I'm Lexis Ponce. Thanks for being with us.
You're listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM and streaming online at kboo.fm.
Tune in at 7 a.m. Monday through Friday for Democracy Now! With Amy Goodman and Juan Gonzalez here on your community radio station, KBOO Portland at 90.7 FM.
Good evening and welcome to Transpositive here on KBOO Community Radio. Today we are talking with Paul Arabino of Our Bold Voices about his new book. Paul, welcome to Transpositive.
Thank you so much for having me.
So Paul, you've got a new book out. Tell us about your new book.
Yeah, our new book is called Defiant Moments, and it's a year after our last one, which was called Defining Moments. And this one is perfectly positioned with what's happening in our world right now.
Oh, great. Well, I'm really going to be excited to hear about your book over the course of this this show. But before we get into your new book, first tell us about your business, Our Bold Voices.
Yeah, so I'm a small storytelling company, and we started in 2017, and we were doing a whole bunch of live community events, and we still do that. But during the pandemic, there was a huge shift, I think, in every industry, I'm sure in yours as well. And so we weren't able to do live storytelling for the longest time. And so during that time, we kind of switched gears, and we went into publishing completely by accident. And that's when we published our first book called COVIDology, where I was leading a lot of these Zoom groups. And I was never even on Zoom before all that. And I was really inspired by all the stories that I learned around resilience. So we kind of accidentally went into publishing with that first book. And then we, and about half of the authors were queer. So that was an easy way to get into defining moments. And now we're kind of just doubling down with everything that's happening in the world right now. So we are publishing Defiant Moments. But I guess the other thing that I wanted to say, Emma, is that once we publish, we go on a book tour. And so people get to read excerpts of their stories, and we get to have a lot of community dialogue. So I guess I'm back doing kind of what my original intent was, which was live storytelling events. I hope that makes sense.
Yes, yeah, I can completely understand the crossover between doing live storytelling and, you know, publishing a book that documents those stories. Tell us about some of the people in your most current book. If you could, please tell us about some of their stories.
Yeah, oh my God, what a great question. Well, I want to start by saying that many of our storytellers are first-time storytellers, and that's one of the things that I like to do, is to make storytelling accessible, right? So I don't like to charge people for it, and so most of our storytellers are first-time storytellers. And with our last book, there's a gentleman named John Lucia, and he had a story to tell, but he was afraid to tell a story, and said that, well, I think I'll just be a beta reader. I'll do that behind the scenes. But then through one of the Zoom groups I do, he shared this story, and it was his first love. And it was during the summer of love in San Francisco. And it was this beautiful story. And we were actually a book group was what we were doing, but he was reflecting on his own personal story. And I just stopped there and said, John, you've got to tell that story. And he got a lot of encouragement from the group, and that's kind of how that came to be. And in our last book, it was really about this love, this relationship, but over time how that morphed. And it was during the AIDS crisis, that the early AIDS crisis, that his boyfriend died. But also the relationship evolved over time. So while they were hot and heavy, you know, when they first met, they weren't lovers anymore, partners, but they were good friends. And it was this wonderful, wonderful story that I absolutely loved. And it was the only story in our last book that had kind of like a theme of love to it, like your first love. So I want to just fast forward to this current book, because we're in the same group, and we were reading a book, I forget what it was now, and John, the same author, talks about in the 1960s how he was he didn't want to go to Vietnam War and die, and also he heard that you could check a box saying that you had, quote, homosexual tendencies, and he checked the box, but it was a very awkward time. And the military didn't have a lot of experience really trying to figure out what to do with us. And so I said, I think we should have you write that story for our next book, kind of half kidding. And he's like, really? Well, what's that book going to be called? And I'm like, I don't know. I think we're going to call it Defiant Moments. And he was the first author for this new book. And I have to be totally transparent and 100% honest that when we did this was a while ago. I didn't think that we'd be in the nightmare that we're in right now. I thought we'd have Kamala Harris as president. I didn't understand, you know. So we went full steam ahead, not realizing the unfortunate political reality we're in right now. And there's no way that we could have moved that quickly to bring a book of this type forward during this period of chaos. So he's one of 15 authors. I'm one of 15 authors. And what happened in this book is that people dug a lot deeper, because the theme is defiance. And what does that mean when your back is against the wall? And I always over-recruit for people who are trans. And so I forget the number, but a very high percentage of our authors are trans, including Stacey Rice, who was in our last book. Stacey was the former director of the Q Center. She dug really deep, and her story, again, was one of the first that we cultivated. It's like, what do you do when you're trans and you need open heart surgery, but your surgeon is transphobic. Holy, that happened to her in our little blue bubble not that long ago. And so she's able to reflect on the defiance in her and how she handled that. Dr. Jameson Green just published a book. He's been in all three books. Love him. He's a trans elder. Many of us are elders in this book, not all. And Jameson talks about his first love and goes back to Portland in the lesbian scene back when he identified as a woman. And it was unbelievable. I could see this being a movie because it's a bar that I'd never heard of before. And it's a whole bunch of changes going on, including being part of a lesbian couple and having a child in a period of time where lesbians, that was not a thing and was kind of ostracized, right? And so, oh my goodness, I could just go on, but all of the stories have this humanness to it. They're all very different and they all speak to sort of what it means to be queer. And I think we get it. And that's why I think with this book tour we're doing, there's been such strong interest in community that we are touring like an unbelievable amount. And I think that we need a little bit of healing right now as a community. And I think we need a little bit of like validation. I'm like, yes, I get you. And during this whole time of queer erasure, right? It's another thing is I wanna make sure that we're recording these stories, that we're amplifying our voices, that we're out there in community and that our voices matter. So let me just stop there because I just said a lot. let me just stop there.
We're talking with Paul Arabino from Our Bold Voices about a new book that Paul's producing called Defiant Moments. Paul, were there any particular stories or perspectives in this book that surprised you or that deeply moved you?
That's a great question. One of our authors is incarcerated, and it's a story that it really touched me. And I think when it comes to prison, I don't really think about people who are incarcerated very much because it's not part of my consciousness. And this author, who's recently incarcerated, had a little time to reflect on his internalized homophobia and how that has affected him in a way that is so relatable that it affected his self-esteem, and he ended up sort of being like a chameleon, like I would be whatever you want me to be because he didn't like who he was. That led him to an unfortunate history of drug addiction and prostitution. He prostituted himself for drugs, and he was very upfront about that. And unfortunately, the drugs that he used when he had somebody over killed that person. And so he was prosecuted for that. And he has gone on to accept responsibility for his behavior. But it really touched me because I understand what it's like to grow up in a family that's homophobic, in a society that's homophobic, and in a world that's transphobic. And I understand that. And yet maybe there's a little part of me that has survivor guilt because I was like, oh my God, I'm so sorry. Like I, you know, that people are struggling with drug addiction like that, to the point where, you know, you're living for your next high, so to speak. Powerful, powerful story. And I'm just pleased that we were able to bring that to print. And we really supported this person who, again, doesn't have the tools that we have on the outside. And one of our authors, Scott Strickland, who was incarcerated at one time in his life, he's been very helpful in bringing that story forward. So we've been working as a team to get that story curated. So I'm very proud of that story. And I would say that's the one that's probably has touched me the most.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, someone who, I'm also a producer here at KBOO for Prison Pipeline. So it really means a lot to me to hear a story about a queer or a trans person whose story is being highlighted in print, somebody who's having to deal with incarceration. So thanks so much for sharing that.
Yeah, and please keep us in mind, because in the future, we will have more of these authors now on email. And people in prison, from that prison, are emailing me, because we do have another book that we're coming forward with, and they're asking lots of questions and they want to be part of it. And that makes me feel so honored. So they also have a creative writing group and they're supporting each other. Again, this is like a whole another world in a federal prison in a state far away. So would love to talk to you in the future about what that's morphing into.
Oh, great. Yeah. That actually kind of leads me to my next question, which is, how do you go about selecting the voices and stories that are included in your book?
That's a great question. So with our first book, it was all local and it was pretty much people that I knew. With our second book, I joined a group. It's a nonprofit out of New York, and they support small presses like me. I guess I'm considered a press. I'm self-published, but it gets me into the world of publishing in a way that I can't do out here in the Pacific Northwest. So it's called CLMP. Please don't ask me what it stands for. And so they have their own submittable page, and that's the main reason why I joined this group. So to give you some context, some of our authors, I would have never even knew they were out there. One of them is a young trans man from Lancaster, Pennsylvania, Kane, and he'll be flying out. We're going to have a big opening event in Portland in May. Several of our authors live in other states. We also have our first Canadian author. I'm so excited, Natasha Nunn. She was planning to fly here. This is just so crazy, Emma, in terms of like how the world has shifted, like in a very short period of time. She was planning on coming to our opening event here in Portland. We're going to do 5 of these over 4 days. And guess what? She's not flying here anymore. She doesn't feel safe. Can you blame her? Do you know what I mean?
Who could blame her?
Huh? Yeah. I mean,
yeah, who could blame her?
I wouldn't. And so this whole defiance is like what's happening in our world right now. But we have Natasha and we have Kane, and we had other authors that for one reason or another, it just didn't work out, I don't think. But I think 2 of those authors came from this submittable page from CLMP. So for our next book, which we are now recruiting for right now, it's a whole different genre. It's really to challenge me. We will also go back to CLMP, but again, we're going back to our prison pipeline, if you will, and word of mouth, and we have authors now in different states. So I'm hoping that we will have more, even more geographic representation, and just more diversity in general.
Well, that leads to my next question.
Wow, you have great questions. Thank you.
Paul, were there any voices or perspectives that you wish you could have included in this book, but you just weren't able to because, I mean, you can only choose so many people?
Yeah. Another excellent question. I had this amazing person in Toronto. So I don't know why people ghost me, or I'm not sure what the right word is, but like you have this connection, it's all online. I'm like, yes, 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 send me something. And then it just stops and then nothing. And I had this young woman who is from Russia, I believe, somewhere Eastern European, I wanna say Russia. And they left there for political reasons, political asylum, which had nothing to do with being queer. She was a young girl or like a teenager at the time. However, over time, she identifies, I forget now, it's been a while, but she's definitely part of our LGBTQ plus community. I want to say that possibly she's trans, and had this remarkable pitch, but then it stopped. And so there were a couple of stories like that that I really wanted to know more about, and I wasn't able to. The other thing I want to say is I'm a very curious person, and one of our authors a trans man who is Mormon, or sorry, was Mormon and was excommunicated. And this was a story that we were able to cultivate. And I'm very proud of that, because there's so much about some organized religions and how transphobic and homophobic that they are, that I, as an outsider, I'm like, can you explain that to me? You know, like I'm a recovering Catholic and I get some of that, but some of it's just tied into scripture. But with Mormonism, it's very deep seated. Like, if you get excommunicated, you're not going to be with your family in the after. So I really loved that we were able to get the experiences like this, these rich experiences. And these stories are a little bit longer than our last book. This book is going to be 405 pages, which is crazy to me. It's like almost double the size of our last book, but these stories really need to be told. So I get to answer your question, there were a few that that didn't make it in there that I'm sad about, but I'm also equally happy that we were able to support some of these new writers with really kind of digging deep. And the other thing I want to say is that for many of us, a lot of this is traumatic, right? So these stories haven't really been told before, and it takes trust. It takes a level of like letting go, because this is survival. And so by me kind of like poking a little bit and saying, well, what does that mean? I don't understand that. Help me understand that. I'm not coming from a place of judgment. I'm just really curious. Help the readers understand what is meant here. And so that really kind of allows the person to unpack some things in a way that they haven't been able to do before. And so that's what's really kind of amazing about this whole process.
Paul, what ethical considerations did you need to keep in mind when representing people's real experiences?
Yes. Excellent question, Emma. I have kind of like a tips and tricks kind of document that I make sure that everybody reads, and we review it together. So we've also had lots of Zoom calls together. Most of our authors have never met before. And since some authors are out of state, so we review each thing. And so to answer your question, there's some things in there where, you know, if you don't want to reveal something, you don't. And also, I have one of the things that's something like, the story should be, it should be cathartic, but not, no, it should be therapeutic, but not therapy. Like, we want to make sure that we're respecting people's rights to share their stories, but also sort of like there's a trigger warning as well. Like, we have to be very careful in how we talk about suicide, for example, or, you know, someone that just like died in your home. So we have to be very careful at how we curate these stories, because we don't want to create more trauma in our community. But at the same time, there's not really a place for us to get into this these stories that are really so relatable, whether you're queer or not, but also for us to really dig into some of these unfortunate realities that exist. And the other thing I want to say about that is there's a lot of history in here. And a lot of the history, unfortunately, is not things that we're particularly proud of in terms of how we've been treated. When you think about any civil rights, human rights issues. So for our readers, especially for our younger readers, it's really important for us to explain the context of like why things are the way they are. Jameson is a good example. Like, you just can't, you know, whatever, do that, because we didn't have the word for that then. We didn't have the laws in place for that. So it's part of it is like shaping that reality so that we understand where you were at that point in time. And we're all individuals. We make choices. But unfortunately, the choices that we were kind of forced to make were not very good choices back in the 50s or 60s or 70s. And so did we have a lot of suicides then? Yeah, we did. Do we still have a lot of suicides now? Yes. And So anyway, I think that's probably longer than you what you wanted, but I would just say it's a very delicate balance involved with that.
Oh no, I really appreciate that. Thank you. Did you face any challenges balancing the individual stories that people were telling with maintaining a cohesive narrative?
Yeah, I think one of the issues with storytelling is there's a container for you, and that container is you get X number of minutes when you're on stage, or you get X number of words, a word count. And for some of our writers, it was very challenging to have it fit in that container because there is so much going on with Defiance. So there is that sort of like push-pull. For example, one of our authors from LA, our only author from LA, Russell, had gone through so many things as a Latino in, well, actually in San Francisco at the time, but LA now, but a lot of, racism, homophobia. Other thing I want to say is this is really before, many of these stories are before we had an understanding of intersectionality, right? And so it was like, you can either be this or you can be that. You can be a feminist, but you can't be that. So this is played out so many times in our stories that it's just like, oh my goodness. But anyway, in Russell's story, there were a lot of things. And with his first draft he sent me, it was 6,000 words. And I'm like, wow, this is amazing. And at the very end, he's like, yeah, and I also want to talk about these 15 things. Like when I confronted Pete Wilson, I'm like, oh my God, okay. Here's the deal, Russell. You have 7,500 words and you're almost there at your max. So, and it was sort of like, but I wanted to, and then there was the early AIDS credit, like, oop. So we would have Zoom calls, and every relationship with the author is different. I'm an author, but I'm also the editor. So I'm like, all right, let's just talk about it on Zoom and let's kind of prioritize where you want to go with it. Because sometimes it's like that story could be a book, right? But guess right. what? There's 15 of us. So I think that's probably the biggest challenge is to curate something. But the other thing, Emma, is that we have a very rigorous process. I'm the developmental editor in the very beginning. Then we have two, test editors or beta readers. And then we go on to our copy editor. And every time they get that feedback, they're going in and they're editing their book. Well, what do you do when the beta reader said, well, can you unpack that a little bit more? I want to know more about the relationship with your father. But what about, why did you... So that all of a sudden now the 6,500 words become like 9,000 words. So it's a lot of sort of like, okay, now, yeah, we have to figure this out. Some of the words, some of the stories have gone over the allotted words. It's really kind of like a guide. But at the same time, if we didn't have structure, then we'd have like a 1,500 page book that people wouldn't buy because it's like an encyclopedia. So,
yeah. Thanks. We're talking today with Paul Arabino, who is the with Our Bold Voices and is the editor of the new book, Defiant Moments. Paul, tell us again that you said there were a couple of events coming up. Can you tell us about those events?
Yeah. So we are doing, so far we have about 25 events scheduled. I'm just floored, honestly. We are starting May 22nd. We're doing one because there's an event or there's a national thing called National Honor Your LGBTQ Elder Day, something like that. So Friendly House has invited us again this year, and we're featuring all of our older adult authors. And then starting on May 29th, we're doing a very big push in Portland. We're flying in our out-of-town authors, and we're doing 5 events in 4 days, and all that will eventually be on our website, ourboldvoices.com. But there's been a lot of interest from community centers, libraries. One of ours is going to be at a gay bar. Churches, places of worship are very interested because we're at this time where, what are you doing for us? You know what I mean? We can't just say we're open and affirming. What's going on here? So we're doing a whole bunch. We are honored that we will be traveling around the state. We'll be going to Pendleton. We'll be going to Eugene and Salem and the Southern Oregon coast and Deschutes County. and even out of town, like places like Los Angeles, where one of our authors is. So we'll be doing several in the state of Oregon from May through August. So we're very, very excited.
Thanks. And what was that website again?
Ourboldvoices.com.
Great, thanks. We're talking today with Paul Arabino about a new book that Paul is working on called Defiant Moments. Paul, how do you see this book contributing to the broader representation of queer identity in literature?
Wow, you have the best questions. I think one way is that we're giving a voice to authors who may not have thought that they had a voice. That, and I will consider myself this. I don't really think of myself as a writer. I don't really think of myself as an author, but I am. I always thought of myself as a storyteller. So part of it is semantics, but I think everyday queer people have a story to tell. And sometimes those stories can be just as powerful, if not more powerful, than maybe queer people that we know in literature, that we know and love, that we buy their work and we follow them and all of that. That is, to me, a very important thing to remember. And there's a sense of how important our stories are, how relatable our stories are, and the need to share those stories, not just in written form, but to raise our hands and say, here I am. And when we toured with our last book, we went all over again, just like what we're doing this next one. And sometimes the dialogue with the audience is just incredible, because what happens was when we read our shorts, this is people who probably haven't bought the book yet, you know, you read a little short, like 5 or 6 minutes of a story that would take about 45 minutes to read, and you end it unresolved, right? So in storytelling, there's a beginning, middle, and an end. Well, when you're on stage, sometimes you're just reading the beginning or the beginning and the middle, and it creates a sense of curiosity in the audience, like, then what happened? And also people get to sort of think about themselves in an event like that, and will share their own stuff. So I think a big part of this for me is beyond the impact it will have for people who we will never meet, but in communities all over the place, what does it mean to be queer right now in history? You know, how are we, you know, banding together, or what are we doing? How are we learning from each other? We did a lot with our last book. We went to these GSAs in Portland Public Schools, and it was so important. I didn't realize that these young queer kids, they were hungry for role models. They were very interested in learning more about queer history from us. Like, how did you get to be so resilient? Well, wasn't easy, but here's kind of what I did here. Here's what I did there. And they have the best questions. So I think to answer your question, I think that it's giving an opportunity for a new voice, a new way of expression that I think it's pretty rare in the industry. Like, if I had to submit this book to a publisher, it probably would be turned down. I would probably be really discouraged. Well, we want this, we want that. It's like, well, I don't have time for that. We need to get our stories out there now, and I will self-publish it because I feel there's a need. And when we tour, our storytellers love that part of this. Even some people who are more introverted, they enjoy it because it's a connection to community. So, that's, I guess, my long way of answering that, Emma.
Thank you. How do you hope that the book will impact those younger queer readers or those who are still exploring their identities?
I hope that this book will bring hope to them, that they will feel maybe less isolated, that they might have a greater sense of confidence, that they will maybe reach out and talk to someone, that this will be in some ways a lifeline to them.
It's been a really difficult time for young queer people, especially for young trans folks. There's been an ongoing assault on transgender identities across the country, but the people who have received the most negative focus has been transgender teenagers. Yes. It may or may not be addressed in your book, but could you comment for a minute on the attack on transgender youth unfolding?
Oh my goodness! Yeah, I just got goosebumps when you asked me that question, because my mind immediately went to one of our authors, and I'm going to really try hard not to cry. So one of our authors is Brandy Penner, and you may know her name because she was on the Newburgh School Board. And she was one of the liberal voices. And I followed it in the news, Emma, like other people. And I'm sure people know that it was a real conservative backlash about suppressing, you know, about suppressing the Black Lives Matter movement, and also real assault on LGBTQ rights. So no pride flags, no nothing. Anything with racial harmony, like, no, it's dead. Okay, so, but what I didn't know until I started working with Brandy is what happened there is kind of a microcosm of what's happening right now. It's an extremely powerful story. What I did not know is that she was, I believe at the time, the only parent in that group that had a child going to a Newburgh school. Many of the parents that were there were homeschooling their children, or they were in private schools. Now, doesn't take much right now to look at how we're destroying the Department of Education, you know, the Health and Human Services, and these committees and things, and we're taking over the Performing Arts Center, and we don't want, you know, so I got a firsthand view of just how horrible that was. And one of the things I didn't know is that one of their first attacks was there was a clinic that was in one of the schools. I believe it was the high school. It took 20 years to build this relationship. So they had a student clinic, and that was one of their first things. And so this is all in Google Docs. And I'm like, but why would they want to do that? Like, help me understand. She's like, because parents want to be these parents, the school district, they don't want somebody else talking to their kids about sex. They're getting that at home. They're learning through homeschool. So I'm just like, oh my God. And so to kind of keep this on track here, what I didn't know is that her daughter is trans. Olivia is trans. And I did not know that. And as a parent, she had to make a very difficult decision about what do I do now. This is after she got off, she was on the board, but she's like, I have to get off the board and I have to move to Portland. I have to leave Newburgh. And this was a community that she really wanted to raise her children in. And so the reason why I'm very emotional is I think about what your question is, which is about trans rights and how horrible it is. And it's kind of like red state migration. Like, this is a thing. And when I went to Portland Public Schools to do these GSA classes, the bulk of the teachers, social workers, very young. Where were they from? Florida, Texas, Louisiana. Because they're coming here for healthcare. They're coming here so they don't get persecuted. I mean, can you imagine? And so it's kind of what Brandy did with her family. And I'm happy for her and their family. But you know what I mean? Like, we have to sort of then segregate. We have to sort of, like, we're so polarized in this country. So on so many levels, the story is just so disturbing. But it's told with such love as a parent. But also at the end of the day, I worry about young trans people, children, young adults that don't have that support, that live in communities like Newburgh, like, what do we do? I mean, there's the Trevor Project, and that's wonderful, but this is such an assault on us. And that's why I feel like we gotta get these stories out there. And how does that happen? Like, I didn't understand. Like, I'm so far removed from prison, school boards, but it's a reminder that we have to step up and we have to get on school boards. We have to do these things. And so that story really affected me. And I have to say, one other thing about this is that we got together last month and we told our stories for all the local people for the first time. There were 12 of us there and each person read their story. It's the first time that we've read our stories since Trump's inauguration. And even though I have heard these stories before on our Zoom calls, myself included, I got very emotional when I read my story. I started crying. And several of us sort of cried and laughed. It was just a different experience. But I want to say one thing. Olivia was there, and I was starting to lose it, because when Brandy's reading her story, I knew it was about this incredible young person and how vulnerable that was for her and the family. So let me just stop there. But yes, I'm hoping that there's some important messaging in this book that addresses those concerns.
Thank you, Paul. Paul, do you have any plans to translate this into anything in film or television?
No, but I would love that. I mean, so right now I'm just exhausted. I can't even, I'm doing focus groups to get the book cover design. Would love to have, one of the authors said, could we have an audio book and we read our own stories? I'm like, yeah, it's a great idea. But like, I feel like I'm an agent. I'm just like fielding all these kind of calls and everything. I would love that. I will say that when I read Jameson's stories, I mentioned earlier, this sort of like lesbian bar in the 1960s, I was like, oh my God. You know, like, it was just like this very romantic scene. And I have to say that I thought I knew about like our history in Portland. I think the place was called, I want to say it was the Copper Moon. It was downtown. And so in our Google notes, I'm saying, oh, da-da-da-da. Is that like the 927? And Jameson says, I never heard of that. What's that? It's like, oh my God, 927? That was a lesbian. Well, this was like, it precluded it. It was like before that. And I was like, oh, okay. Well, he's like, when did you get to Portland? I'm like, 1989. He's like, oh. So anyway, I would love for it to go further, and maybe that's a conversation offline, because there's some incredible stories in here. Even I had this fantasy in our last book of doing something like the Vagina Monologues, where we have like a black space and we're doing dark, like we're just telling, just the narrative, reading them. Unbelievable. I'm so open to that. So hook me up.
What does it mean for a listener or a reader to just sit and be present with a story? What is it about storytelling that's so fundamental to our nature?
Yeah, I personally think it's, we don't have enough of it. I think especially right now we're in this digital world and our attention spans are really short. And it's like, give me the quick YouTube video. I want the TikTok version. I think, what storytelling does is it's like you're bearing your soul. It's something that we just don't do. So I'm a firm believer in active voice when we're telling our stories. And it's not like, hi, I'm Paul Arvin, and today I'm gonna, no, you just get right into the story. And these are stories that are very personal stories and that you would tell a very close friend. And so on stage, it really is a gift to receive that kind of messaging, that kind of story, the trust involved with that. So what I find when I do these events, it eliminates all of the, you know, the nicey-nice stuff. And, you know, like the, it's just like we're getting right into a story. And I like to have a little time between each story. So, you know, kind of like on a wine tasting, you cleanse your palate. These are like bearing our soul. And in doing so, I believe that when we absorb a story like that, it affects us three ways: the head, the heart, and the hands. And people don't always understand that. The head, obviously, right? But the heart is really kind of where it's going. And so we really want to kind of hit those both of those senses. But what most people don't realize with storytelling, really good storytelling, is the hands part. And that means, what is your call to action? What are you motivated to do next? Very powerful. And I cannot tell you the number of times when people come to me years later and say, oh my goodness, I didn't even know that was a thing. I went online and Googled it. I found out that there was a support group. I found out, I went out and I donated my time. I went and I donated money to this charity that I didn't even know existed. And also, part of what we're doing and in our partnering is we're really trying to partner with smaller grassroots organizations so that we can maybe help raise money for them, raise awareness. So that is my hope, is just to create that container, whether you're home reading the book and then curious on your own. There are some book groups that are taking on this book, and we will be going out and talking to the book group after they've read it. There's a whole bunch of possibilities, but I think the biggest one is to be able to have a conversation with the author at a live event. Yeah.
What's next for you, Paul? Do you have any upcoming projects related to the release of this book or to queer storytelling?
Yeah, so I always have a next project, and so this one has taken a lot of time. I've been doing like one a year. It's a big commitment. The next book I'm very excited about, and it's on the website as well. It's called How We Met. And these are going to be fiction, which is something I haven't done before. So everything I've done so far is nonfiction. So I'm challenging myself as an author and as an editor. And it's really about queer love and mentorship, and anything in between. For example, when I talked about John Lucia earlier, it was a romantic relationship that became a friendship. And there's several people in my life, maybe as elders, who've mentored me, and it wasn't a sexual relationship. I really want to look into our relationships in our community. What does that look like? And because I haven't done something like this before, I figured, let's just do it as fiction. About 4 or 5 years ago, I did something for Valentine's Day, and it was one of our best events, actually. It was called How We Met. And it was queer couples talking about how they first met. And it was very fun, because when you first meet, you don't know anything about that person necessarily, or maybe you heard something. So it's like, What is like all that tingling going on? What's happening? So this one here is really kind of like a stretch for me artistically. And it can be based on, you know, true events, but I thought, well, let's just fictionalize it. So that's the next project. I think it's called How We Met, and something like Truly Queer Stories, something like that. That's on the website, but right now, I haven't been able to focus on it because I'm just trying to get this book to print. But that's the next one that we're doing. Very different, not defiance, a little more levity. We'll see.
We're talking with Paul Arabino, who is the editor of the new book, Defiant Moments. Paul, we're getting near the end of the interview. Could you remind us again of a couple of things? One is, where can people find out more about the book? And also, if you have any upcoming events.
Yes, thank you. I guess I would just put a plug in, Emma, for our website, which is ourboldvoices.com. All of our events will appear there. I don't know when this is going to be broadcast, but they're not there yet, because we keep, every day, there's like a new request. But we, starting in May of this year, we're going to have a whole bunch all the way through August, and all around the state of Oregon. some up in Washington and some out of state. So I would love for people to come to those, maybe even read the book beforehand if they have a chance to do that, and get to interact with our authors. Also, we'll be publishing another book next year called How We Met. They're basically stories of queer love and mentorship. So on the same website, look at that. If you know anybody that's a writer, I would love to have more diversity in our stories, people living in different states, different experiences. So check out our website, I guess, is the number one thing. The other thing is on our website there, if you're curious about live events, we have a storytelling tab, and you can see when we did our last book, if you're curious about defining moments, you can see little clips of our event that we did at a big event last June for Pride. I'm very excited to participate at various Pride events throughout Oregon and to represent us to us. I'm just super excited that this is not about money. It's really about the greater good and connections that we build in community.
Paul, my last question is, what's one message or feeling of hope that you that you hope readers will take away from this book?
Wow, you have great questions. I think one of the things I want to say, and I guess I can say I'm a queer elder, so I will say this. I have lived through many things that have been quite egregious in my lifetime. I lived through President Ronald Reagan. I lived through a period of time where during the early AIDS days, there was a lot of hatred, a lot of backlash toward gay men, gay and bisexual men. The story I write in this book has to do with me donating blood from when I was 16 years old to current day, and how different that was, and how there was a period of time in my life that I felt tainted because of what was pushed onto me that had nothing to do with me. So what I want to say is there's a lot of rich voices in here that are attached to history, and I want to say that as queer people, this is not new to us. And so we've always had to fight. We've always had to be resilient. We've always had to live in a period of time with ambiguity and othering and hatred and all of that. And I don't want to come across as, you know, like, and now we're resilient. No. But there's something about us that we are survivors and we push. And what I'm hoping to do in this book is to sort of like illustrate some of these examples and also say that times right now are really dark, but I am seeing hope. I am seeing pushback. I am seeing like we're going to have a march, not just here in Portland, but all over our country right now, we are swelling up. There's this groundswell of like, that is not okay. It's not acceptable. And you cannot marginalize a group of people. You cannot marginalize trans people, immigrants, women. Like, you can't, no, you can't do that. We have got to stand up for one another. And it's, again, that hope that that if we can provide sort of like a place to do that. And that's why publishing is great for me, but it's really about community. It's going to libraries. We did one of our events last year at the McMinnville Library. Oh my goodness. It had been posted there at the library, a flyer and everything. And I talked to people afterward and I'm like, how did you learn about this? Why are you here? And people were honest. They said, I have never seen anything like even remotely queer at the McMinnville Library before ever. And so I got to go check it out. People came from Amityville or these different towns I never heard of before. It was packed and it provided a sense of community together. And just like, I work with the county wine people, the library, that's when they had a lesbian mayor who's no longer mayor. She was replaced with a more conservative. So I guess I just want to say, like, we are looking at opportunities to support one another, and we need to do that. We cannot get through this alone. And right now I have to limit myself to the news consumption. It's extremely, you know, disheartening. So I'm hopeful. I'm very hopeful. And when people ask me, I'm like, I've been so immersed in this book and cultivating the stories and like partnering with, I'm excited for like our future, at least locally, that we have a chance to sort of connect with community. I love that. So
thank you. So we've been joined today on Transpositive by Paul Arabino from Our Bold Voices, talking about a new book that he's working on, Defiant Moments. Paul, thank you so much for joining us today on Transpositive.
Thank you so much for having me, Emma.
Transgender people don't live here.
I've never met anyone who's transgender.
I swear I don't know someone who's transgender.
Transgender and non-binary people like me hear this all the time.
But according to the HRC Foundation, there are more than 2 million transgender people in the United States.
We live in every community across this country.
You might be surprised to hear that there are more transgender and non-binary people in the United States than there are
Starbucks, McDonald's, and Walmart locations combined.
In fact, if you put us all together,
there'd be more non-binary and transgender folks than the populations of DC,
or Nebraska,
or Maine,
or Idaho,
or West Virginia.
As a matter of fact, 15 states have a lower population than the amount of trans folks in the US.
So here are a few things to keep in mind.
You don't always know when a person is trans.
But we're your neighbors,
your coworkers,
your students,
your customers,
and even your friends and family.
We exist in every culture, todas las culturas, throughout human history.
And while we're more visible than ever before,
sometimes you just don't see us.
So when you hear about politicians pushing for discriminatory bills,
know this, these bills address problems that aren't even real.
Problems that don't actually exist.
But we do.
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 And we need your support.
Hi, this is Emma.
I am a co-host of Transpositive here at KBOO. At KBOO, we prove every day that people-powered radio has the ability to bring us together across distances and give us hope when we feel despair. Your friends at KBOO want to remind you that generosity has the same power. Join thousands of KBOO supporters from all around the world, and let's rally together to build stronger communities. If you can, just go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to this number 44321. And thanks so much for your support of KBOO Community Radio. Bedroom
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation